The Count of Saint-Germain, a controversial figure in the intrigues of 18th century Europe, was a secretive and colorful individual known as the Count of Saint-Germain. Saint-Germain's life has been the subject of many articles and at least one book. Ever since his reported death in 1784, there has been a tendency to either deify him or to dismiss him as an unimportant charlatan. Neither characterization seems to accurately reflect what he truly was. Not to be confused with the French general of the same name, nor Claude Louis de Saint-Germain, an 18th century mystic, Saint-Germain's activities are important because his movements provide a fascinating link between the wars going on in Europe, the deeper levels of the Brotherhood, and the clique of German princes, particularly the House of Hesse. The first of many mysteries concerning Saint-Germain is the circumstance of his birth. Many researchers believe him to have been the offspring of Francis II, ruler of the once powerful Principality of Transylvania. Transylvania, famous in cinema as the home of the mythical human vampire, Dracula, and other assorted literary ne'er-do-wells, had ties to the dynasty in Hesse. Francis II of Transylvania had married 16-year-old Charlotte Amalia of Hessen-Rheinfels on September 25, 1694 at the Cathedral of Cologne in Germany. Out of this union came two known children. However, when the will of Francis II was published in 1737, a third unnamed son was mentioned as a beneficiary. This third child proved to be Leopold George, eldest son and heir to the Transylvanian throne. Leopold George was born in either 1691 or 1696, depending upon which theory of his birth one accepts. Because of the uncertainty of his birth date, it is not known if he was the son of Charlotte of Hesse or of Francis II's prior wife. What does appear certain is that Leopold George's early death in 1700 had been staged to save him from the deadly intrigues which were about to destroy the Transylvanian dynasty and end the independence of Transylvania. Leopold George is believed to have been the Count of Saint-Germain. Saint-Germain first appeared in European society in 1743 when he would have been a man in his 40s. Little is known about his life before that year. A dossier on the mysterious Count had been created by order of French Emperor Napoleon III R1852-1870, but, unfortunately, all of the documents were destroyed in a fire that engulfed the house in which the dossier was stored. This resulted in the loss of irreplaceable information about Saint-Germain. Saint-Germain's own secretiveness only deepens the mystery about his life. The surviving information indicates that Saint-Germain was raised to become one of the most active, colorful, and successful secret political agents of the Brotherhood in the 18th century. Of Saint-Germain's early life, strict observance leader Prince Karl of Hesse wrote that Saint-Germain had been raised in childhood by the last of the powerful Medici family of Italy. The Duke of Medici, like some earlier Medicis, was engrossed in the mystical philosophies prevalent in Italy at the time, which may account for Saint-Germain's deep involvement in the Brotherhood network as an adult. While under Medici care, Saint-Germain is believed to have studied at the university in Siena. Saint-Germain's first documented appearance in European society occurred in England in 1743. At that time, the Jacobite cause was very strong and the 1745 invasion of Scotland was only 2 years away. During those two crucial years prior to the invasion, Saint-Germain resided in London. Only glimpses of his activities during that time are available. Saint-Germain was a gifted musician and several of his musical compositions were publicly performed in the Little Haymarket Theatre in early February 1745. Saint-Germain also had several of his trios published by the Walsh Company of London. British authorities did not believe that Saint-Germain was in London to pursue a musical career. However, in December 1745, with the Jacobite invasion underway, Saint-Germain was arrested by the British on suspicion of being a Jacobite agent. He was released when rumored letters from Charles Edward, leader of the Stuart invasion, were not found on his person. Horace Walpole wrote of the arrest afterwards, "T'other day they seized an odd man, who goes by the name of Count Saint-Germain. He has been here these 2 years, will not tell who he is or whence, but professes two very wonderful things, the first that he does not go by his right name, and the second, that he never had any dealings, or desire to have any dealings, with any woman nay, nor with any succedaneum, substitute. He sings, plays on the violin wonderfully, composes, is mad, and not very sensible. After his release, Saint Germain departed England and spent 1 year as the guest of Prince Ferdinand von Lobkowitz, first minister to the Austrian Emperor. The War of Austrian Succession was still raging at the time, in which Austria and England were allied against France and Prussia. During this visit to Austria, Saint Germain was introduced to the French Minister of War, the Marshal de Belleisle, who, in turn, introduced Saint Germain to the French court. This is an intriguing sequence of events. Here we have a man arrested as a suspected enemy of England during a time of war, who then immediately went to stay with the top minister of a nation, Austria, which was allied to England. During that stay, this same man befriended the minister of war of a nation, France, which was an enemy of Austria. Saint Germain's political contacts on all sides of a raging war were remarkable. What Saint Germain did for the next 3 years after leaving Austria is not certain. Saint Germain reappeared in European society again in 1749, this time as a guest of King Louis XV of France. France, a Catholic nation, actively supported the Jacobite cause against the Hanoverians of England. France was also involved in many other foreign intrigues. According to a lady of the French court who later wrote of Saint Germain in her memoirs, from 1749, the king, Louis XV, employed him, St. Germain, on diplomatic missions and he acquitted himself honorably in them. King Louis had gained fame as an architect of 18th century secret diplomacy. The acceptance of Saint Germain into the French court and his work for the French king as a political agent is significant for several reasons. First, it points to the important role that Brotherhood members have played in the creation and operation of national and international intelligence networks throughout history, a matter we will consider in more detail in later chapters. Secondly, as a Catholic, King Louis XV adhered to papal decrees. The papacy was hostile to Freemasonry. Indeed, Roman Catholicism and Freemasonry are both factions with origins in the Brotherhood which have long opposed one another. In 1737, Louis XV issued an edict forbidding all French subjects to have anything to do with Freemasonry. During the ensuing decades, the French government actively repressed the French Freemasons with police raids and imprisonment. Louis XV's edict of 1737 was followed a year later by Pope Clement's papal bull which forbade Catholics everywhere from participating in or supporting Freemasonry under penalty of excommunication. Yet here was the Count of Saint Germain, who would later reveal a lifelong involvement in the Brotherhood, residing as a guest of the king. The likely explanation, based upon the known facts of Saint Germain's life, is that he was not so much a Freemason as he was an agent of the higher Brotherhood. It is also unlikely that the French king understood Saint Germain's role in the Brotherhood network. Saint Germain's exact activities from 1749 through 1755 are largely unknown. In 1755, he made a second trip to India. He went with English commander Robert Clive, who was on his way there to fight the French. India was a major theater of war in which a great deal was at stake. Commander Clive was an important leader on the British side. This trip highlighted once again Saint Germain's remarkable political contacts and his ability to travel back and forth between important leaders of warring camps. One biographer has suggested that the Count may have been acting as a secret agent of King Louis XV of France when he went to India with Clive, for when Saint Germain returned, he was awarded in 1758 with an apartment in the French royal palace at Chambord. He was also given laboratory facilities for his chemical and alchemical experiments, in which Louis XV sometimes participated. Saint Germain was clearly a flamboyant and multifaceted character. One of the talents for which he achieved fame was his considerable knowledge of alchemy. Alchemy mixes mysticism with chemistry and was a staple of Rosicrucian practice. Saint Germain became a topic of gossip in the French court because he claimed to possess the alchemical elixir of life. The elixir was said to be a secret formula which made people physically immortal. This was the same elixir many European Rosicrucians claimed to possess. Saint Germain may have had tongue slightly in cheek when he made the claim. However, he is quoted as saying to King Louis XV, "Sire, I sometimes amuse myself not by making it believed, but by allowing it to be believed, that I have lived in ancient times." In 1760, Saint Germain left France for The Hague in Holland. This trip was made during the height of the Seven Years' War. Holland was a neutral country during that conflict. Exactly what Saint-Germain was trying to accomplish in Holland remains debated even today. After declaring himself to be a secret agent of King Louis XV, Saint-Germain tried to gain an audience with the English representative at The Hague. Saint-Germain claimed that he was there to negotiate a peace between England and France. However, the French foreign minister, the Duke of Choiseul, and the French ambassador to Holland, Count D'Affry, had not been notified by their king about Saint-Germain's purported mission. The Duke of Choiseul therefore branded Saint-Germain a charlatan and ordered his arrest. To avoid imprisonment by Dutch authorities, Saint-Germain fled to London in the same year. Saint-Germain's escape was aided by his influential friend, Count Bentinck, the president of the Dutch Council of Deputy Commissioners. As a result of this debacle and the unwillingness of Louis XV to publicly acknowledge Saint-Germain as his agent, Saint-Germain was unable to openly return to French Royal Society until 1770, the year in which his enemy, the Duke of Choiseul, was disgraced and removed from power. Saint-Germain had a second, and perhaps even more compelling, reason for making that ill-fated trip to Holland. A letter written on March 25, 1760 by Prince de Galitzin, Russian minister to England, offered this insight into Saint-Germain's aborted activities in Holland. "I know the Count de Saint-Germain well by reputation. This singular man has been staying for some time in this country, and I do not know whether he likes it. There is someone here with whom he appears to be in correspondence, and this person declares that the object of the Count's journey to Holland is merely some financial business." The financial business mentioned by de Galitzin was very secret. It appeared to be the true purpose of Saint-Germain's visit. Saint-Germain was in Holland to exploit the marriage of a Princess Caroline to the German Prince of Nassau-Dillenburg for the purposes of establishing a fund for France. Saint-Germain wanted to negotiate the formation of the fund with Dutch bankers. According to French Ambassador D'Affry, his objective in general was to secure the credit of the principal bankers there for us. In another letter, D'Affry stated that Saint-Germain had come to Holland solely to complete the formation of a company adequate to the responsibility of this fund. The formation of the fund was probably the true reason for Saint-Germain's, and perhaps King Louis's, extreme secrecy. France already had important financiers to the royal court, the wealthy Paris Duverney brothers. The Paris brothers had salvaged France's financial standing after the disastrous Bank of France episode involving the inflated money of John Locke. Saint-Germain was quite hostile to the Paris brothers and he did not want them to gain control of the fund. Saint-Germain is quoted by Monsieur de Cotterbach, a minister of the Saxon court in The Hague. He, King Louis XV of France, is surrounded only by creatures placed by the brothers Paris, who alone cause all the trouble of France. It is they who corrupt everything, and thwarted the plans of the best citizen in France, the Marshal de Belle Isle. Hence the disunion and jealousy amongst the ministers. All is corrupted by the brothers Paris, Paris France, provided they may attain their object of gaining 800 millions. Saint-Germain may well have had legitimate grounds for objecting to the undue influence of the Paris brothers. Saint-Germain's mission in The Hague, however, was only an attempt to covertly wrest financial control from the Paris brothers and put it back into the hands of the same clique of financiers whose predecessors had institutionalized the inflatable paper money system to begin with, the very system which had brought financial ruin to France and the consequent intervention of the Paris brothers. Because of Saint-Germain's sudden forced departure from Holland, he was never able to complete his financial mission. Upon arriving in London after fleeing Holland, Saint-Germain was once again arrested and released. During this short stay in England, Saint-Germain published 7 violin solos. Saint-Germain continued his covert political activities after leaving London. In 1760, he returned secretly to Paris. There Saint-Germain is believed to have stayed with his friend, the Princess of Anhalt-Zerbst. Anhalt-Zerbst was another German state which rented mercenaries to England, although it never accumulated the same wealth as some of its German neighbors. The Princess of Anhalt-Zerbst had a daughter, Catherine II. On August 21, 1744, Catherine II had married Peter III of Russia. This marriage had been arranged by Frederick the Great of Prussia, who was a friend of the Anhalt-Zerbst family and, at least for a time, of Saint-Germain. In 1762, 2 years after Saint Germain's quiet return to Paris, Peter III assumed the Russian throne. Saint Germain traveled immediately to the Russian capital of St. Petersburg, where he helped Catherine overthrow Peter and establish her as the Empress of Russia. Assisting in the coup d'etat was the Russian Orlov family. The Orlovs are believed to have murdered Peter by strangling him in a phony brawl. For his assistance in the coup, Saint Germain was made a general of the Russian army, and he remained a close friend of the Orlov family for many years. Catherine, who later became known as Catherine the Great, went on tour rule Russia for 29 years. With this bold coup, Saint Germain had helped put Russia under the rule of the same small clique of German royal families under which other European countries had fallen. The same modus operandi was used: the marriage of a royal German into the victim dynasty followed by a revolution or coup. Here we find evidence of direct brotherhood involvement in the person of Saint Germain. What Saint Germain did between 1763 and 1769 after leaving Russia is a mystery. He is known to have spent approximately 1 year in Berlin and was a short-term guest of Friedrich August of Brunswick. From Brunswick, Saint Germain continued his travels around Europe. He returned to France in 1770. In 1772, Saint Germain again acted as an agent for Louis XV, this time during negotiations in Vienna over the partition of Poland. Unfortunately for Saint Germain, Louis XV died on May 10, 1774, and Louis's 19-year-old grandson, Louis XV, took the throne. The new king brought Choiseul back to power and took a personal dislike to Saint Germain. The count was forced to leave French society for the last time. Saint Germain immediately departed for Germany, where, only 11 days after the death of Louis XV, he was a guest of William IX of Hesse, the prince who was to inherit the vast Hesse castle fortune. According to J.J. Bjornstall, writing in his book of travels, "We were guests at the court of the prince hereditary Wilhelm von Hessen Castle, brother of Karl von Hessen, at Hanau, near Frankfurt. As we returned on the 21st of May 1774 to the castle of Hanau, we found their Lord Cavendish and the Comte de Saint-Germain. They had come from Lausanne, and were traveling to Kassel and Berlin. After his visit to the home of the Hessian prince, Saint-Germain traveled about Europe some more. He was welcomed as a guest of the Margrave of Brandenburg and by others. Finally, in 1779, Saint-Germain was taken in by Prince Karl of Hesse, who was a top leader of the strict observance. Saint Germain spent the last 5 years of his known life with Karl. In 1784, Saint Germain reportedly died. The church register of Eckenford contained the entry: deceased on February 27, buried on March 2, 1784, the so-called Comte de Saint Germain and Weldon. Further information not known privately deposited in this church. Saint Germain used many aliases. Weldon was one of them. It was after his reported death that Saint Germain's true status within the Brotherhood emerged. Not only was Saint Germain portrayed as one of the highest representatives of the Brotherhood, he was also deified as a physically immortal being who did not age or die. A number of his contemporary admirers claim that they saw Saint Germain at times when it should have been impossible for them to do so because of Saint Germain's age. For example, Baron E. H. Gleachin, writing in his memoirs published in 1868, stated, "I have heard Rameau and an old relative of a French ambassador at Venice testify to having known Saint Germain in 1710, when he had the appearance of a man of 50 years of age. If Saint Germain was 50 years old in 1710, then he would have been 124 years old when he reportedly died." There are, however, those who claim that Saint Germain did not die in 1784. A German mystical magazine published in 1857, Magazin der Beweisführer für Verirrtheilung des Freimaurer Ordens, stated that Saint Germain was one of the French representatives to the 1785 Masonic Convention in Paris, 1 year after his reported death. Another writer, Cantu César, in his work, Gliarettesi d'Italia, stated that Saint Germain was present at the famous Wilhelmsbad Masonic Conference, which was also held in 1785. These reports are viewed by some people as evidence that Saint Germain's death had been staged, perhaps for the second time in his life, to enable him to escape the controversy which surrounded him so that he could live out the rest of his life in relative quiet. Saint Germain's alleged appearances after death did not end in 1785, however. Countess d'Adhemar, a member of the French court who wrote her memoirs shortly before her death in 1822, alleged seeing Saint Germain many times after his reported death, usually during times of upheaval. She claimed that Saint Germain had sent warnings to the King and Queen of France, his enemy Louis V and Marie Antoinette, just prior to the outbreak of the French Revolution, which occurred in 1789. She also claimed that she saw him in 1793, 1804, 1813, and 1820. A Rosicrucian writer, Franz Grieffer, stated that Saint Germain had made appearances in Austria after his reported death, and was honored there as an advanced adept of the Brotherhood. In the late 1800s, Madame Helena Blavatsky, one of the co-founders of the Theosophical Society, declared that Saint Germain was one of the hidden masters of Tibet who secretly controlled the destiny of the world. In 1919, a man claiming to be Saint Germain appeared in Hungary at a time when a successful communist-led revolution was underway in that country. Finally, in 1930, a man named Guy Ballard claimed that he met Saint Germain on Mount Shasta in California, and that Saint Germain had helped him establish a new brotherhood branch known as the IAM. We will look at the IAM in a later chapter. Were all of these witnesses lying? Probably not. The Brotherhood occasionally sponsored resurrections as a way to deify select members. That is what had been done with Jesus. In fact, those Brotherhood branches which deify Saint Germain, which is certainly not all of them, often give Saint Germain the same spiritual status as Jesus. Why Saint Germain was chosen for deification may never be fully understood. Perhaps his successes on behalf of the Brotherhood were far more numerous than we know. Whatever the reason might have been, it is clear that Saint Germain was mortal. He did die, if not on the reported date of his demise, then surely within a decade of it. During his lifetime, and still today, many people have labeled Saint Germain a fraud and charlatan. Some critics contend that Saint Germain was nothing more than a glib con artist of common birth whose entry into royal society came about solely through his wiles and colorful personality. The evidence we have looked at clearly does not support this argument. It was not easy for an outsider to enter so many royal circles and remain there. Saint Germain's involvement in the overthrow of Peter of Russia was not a petty scam, it was a major coup which altered the political landscape of Europe. Yes, Saint Germain was a charlatan on a number of matters, but that made his political activities and connections no less significant. Saint Germain's color and flamboyance obscured a deadly serious side to his life. His travels and activities tied the Brotherhood to the Hessian princes, the intrigues of France, the wars of Europe, and the paper money bankers. The personality of Saint Germain reveals that when we discuss behind-the-scenes influences, we are not necessarily talking about eerie characters who skulk about in shadows doing incomprehensible things. We are usually discussing people who are as lively and colorful as the rest of us. They succeed and they fail. They have their charms and their quirks like everyone else. They exercise influence over people, but not puppet-like control. They are affected by the same things that everyone else is affected by. These observations led to an important point, when some writers describe the influence of the Brotherhood network in history, and when some readers read about it, they envision strange subterranean occult forces at work. This is an illusion generated by the mysticism and secrecy of the Brotherhood itself. Changes in society, whether for good or bad, are caused by people doing things. The Brotherhood network has simply been an effective channel to get people to act, and to keep much of what they do secret. The influence of the Brotherhood network only appears mysterious and occult because so many actions have gone unrecorded and unknown to outsiders. The corrupted Brotherhood network does not have today, nor has it ever had, effective occult powers. The world can therefore be remade for the better by people simply acting and doing. No magic wand is needed, just some elbow grease.